When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
No, and yeah, they've had to shoehorn her in so many different places now.
And now we've been reduced to Waldorf and Statler. The circle is complete. We've all become Muppeted by this fucking show.
We will all be Muppets eventually, Aaron.
Yeah.
You either die young or you live long enough to see yourself become a Muppet.
To see yourself become plush.
Welcome to The Watching Dead, the officially unofficial podcast for The Walking Dead, the ones who live on AMC. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking episode 2, Gone. This is the Michonne-focused episode. The first one was the Rick-focused one. Now we go to the other side of the equation here. Aaron, how's it all adding up for you so far?
So there's a lot of things about this episode I really like. Like I said about last episode, and probably won't be saying a lot this season, I think Danai Gurira is a really good actor. And I think her and Andrew Lincoln have a lot of chemistry. And I really believed everything about the reunion. And I quite liked it. I like her custom armor. I even like the screaming sticks. But this is like one of the worst indulgences in the Walking Dead, like one shot character introduction plus deep backstory monologue plus character ticks plus character traits plus like just layer on so much icing and frosting and hats until you've got a character that people are going to care about when they die. And it didn't work. Like, it never works. You know, I've been watching, you know, a lot of like 80s television and late 70s television. My buddy Jay, we're starting up the Feeny podcast again, where we kind of do that thing. And that's like a stock and trade in like procedural show. Like, if you have a interesting character, you know, you're never going to see them again next week because you get your core characters and they can't ever change. So, like, you know, they either got to die or they got to leave in a heroic fashion at the end of the episode. And they have these like memorable things. They give people hooks and layers and characters and backstories. But ultimately, you know, who gives a shit, because they're not going to be elevated to the main cast. That's my review this episode. I liked all, like, you know, another crazy post-apocalyptic group. Another couple of colorful characters that are introduced just to extinguish. And then we got to where we wanted to get, which is Rick and Michonne trying to fight their way out of the CRM. Bonus trash lady appearance. Jim, bonus. What did you think of this episode?
That's a bonus for you, huh? All right. To each their own. this is classic Walking Dead right here. Classic Walking Dead. And even more Walking Dead than Walking Dead has ever been. Walking Dead has a reputation and a history, a well-deserved reputation, of introducing new characters, trying desperately to make us care for them, and then killing them off. And this episode does it in a single run. It introduces the character. It tries desperately to, like you said, give them quirks, like make them an interesting, appealing character. And then it has the balls to kill them in the same episode. That's record. That's speed running the Walking Dead formula right there. It did not work for me on that regard, because I just could not care. And they don't even do it with one character. Usually there'll be a focus. They'll be like, okay, we'll have a 3-episode arc with, I don't know, this person that they found in the woods, and it'll be poignant for our main characters because there'll be some thing that you recognize in this character that relates to the main characters. And then we'll kill them. In this one, they did it multiple times. They really tried to make me care about 2 separate people in this and be devastated when they died. Have Michonne be devastated and therefore me. None of that worked. Yeah. It's just too shortcut. I don't have time to get invested in a 42-minute... Well, okay, it's a little bit longer, but not much, honestly. It can't be, because there's It's 56 minutes on Amazon, and there's like pre-credit stuff and like recaps, and there's post-credits, like behind the scenes stuff. It's got to be like a 42-minute episode of television, and I just can't care that much about somebody that I see. The difference being MacGyver, when he meets some lady that he fancies, some scientist he's got to help or something, that's all he's doing is he's helping her for the week, and then he's leaving. And there's no emotional scene where they have him weeping over the corpse of this woman because he's developed such a strong bond in 42 minutes. This show wants to do that, and it just doesn't work.
Yeah, and especially it's egregious because clearly this character, they're like, what do we need Michonne to learn? Let's construct a character to hit all of those notes.
It's reverse engineered. Yeah.
You already have this like artificial feeling, and then it's just like, it's just so much the quirks. Like, you have a little person with a tragic backstory that's actually also an inspirational backstory, and they're an inventor, and they can make all these fantastical weapons, and they got a keepsake, and an inspiring backstory's stepdad's name was Danger, and he's got a danger lighter that he's always flipping with, and then...
Yeah, it's like they took every single lesson that they learned through four-plus years of drama school and tried to cram it into a single episode, and it just doesn't work.
And then you're like, so like, this episode is written by Channing Powell, who, as far as I can tell, wrote like two episodes of Suits back in 2010, was immediately like right out of film school, and was pushed into the Walking Dead salt mines. And she's been writing for, you know, Fear the Walking Dead and World Beyond ever since. And then also Nana Nequeti, who seems to be a very young writer with a lot of promise, won a award for their collection of poetry, and then again instantly drafted out of film school, put on this episode, and it does feel like a lot of like inexperience and maybe like like a lot of soft expectations. You know, it's like you can get a lot of good experience on The Walking Dead, but can you if everyone in the writer's room just wants to be out for cocktails by noon? And, you know, anything beyond like a first level thinking of the plot is like scorned and put down upon. We don't have any money for this. We're just going to go for broke on fucking latex and blood like we always do. It's just, yeah.
And it's a lot also, of this is forced by the structure of this miniseries, too. I think like six episodes is a fair amount of storytelling room. But they want to do too much with it. They both want to give us the reunion of Rick and Michonne, which needs to be epic. And they want to do it in the first episode because they want to tell this other story, which is Rick and Michonne taking down yet another authoritarian regime. Like, this tried and true, I guess, method of Walking Dead storytelling. There's not enough time to do everything you want to do and make it really resonate. And so we're getting into these shortcuts.
And as I was watching it a second time, I'm like, we know that Michonne is with this group of people, these travelers. We could open on, though, she's still migrating these people, and with the understanding they're kind of heading in the general direction of Rick, and she's kind of joined with them temporarily. The CRM sees them and gas bombs them. Michonne's the lone survivor because, of course, she fucking is. Mm-hmm. And you also have the hook of she's got the radio, so she has like this she has this really scratchy conversation with Judith every night. And you can tell that there's like a pull between the possibility of Rick and the certainty of her kids. Mm-hmm. And when she's left alone after this attack, and she's out of suddenly out of radio contact with her children, and she can have that kind of like breakdown alone. I don't need
an
emotional surrogate partner for her to like have this breakdown where she gives up on Rick, and instead of it's kind of a distraction that, you know, this guy's kind of Jiminy Cricketing her emotional state, and it just didn't. It's not only that it didn't work, but it's just like the worst impulse is The Walking Dead come home to roost.
That's the problem. It's a pattern I've seen over and over again with this show.
And also, I am feeling a little bit better about the overall arc of the season because I am now convinced that we are getting to three movies just as a miniseries. Like, doesn't this feel like a movie? Like this, the two halves of a movie. Where you're ending on the cliffhanger with Jadis. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you have like, well, the first half's going to be Rick, the second half's going to be Michonne, and then there's going to be the last act is kind of the synthesis, and then there's a cliffhanger of, oh my God, how is she going to survive in a CRM with Jadis down her neck? And then, mm-hmm. so I feel like there's, at least we're not going to be bored to death, but...
Yeah, that's true. They don't have time to bore us.
Yeah, you just still have a... You still have... It's just the same players that have been fucking the series up for a long time. Like, next week, we'll get Matthew Negrete. Oh, Mr. Sure, Timon and Pumbaa, mm-hmm. and Power Rangers, who was drafted immediately in The Walking Dead and given apparently no creative guidance or you know, inspiration or drive or support, because he's been shitting out bad scripts for The Walking Dead for a decade now. So it's like, you know, and Scott Gimple's on top, well, supreme smug satisfaction at everything he does. Never heard an idea he doesn't love and want to immediately implement without any thought. And it's just like, I wish Andrew Lincoln and Danai Gurira didn't love Andrew Gimple so much, because like they had to want him on this project or he wouldn't be on this project.
Yeah, no, I get the impression that behind the scenes, everybody likes everybody here, except for maybe the AMC execs don't like the people who spend the money. But yeah, that's good. That's healthy. You want a show to run like that, but you also need people who are going to say, is this the best path forward? And sort of question the mainstays of The Walking Dead. If the mainstay has taken you from 18 million people watching to 2 million people or less, mm-hmm. is the mainstay something we want to stay with? Or do we want to actually change up the formula a little bit? Maybe make some groundbreaking television again, because we haven't done that in a long time.
Yeah, or but maybe also cheaping out and staying with the same old is the way to go, because I just saw the ratings for the first episode, 0.89.
Oh, see? Yeah.
Like, they couldn't even get to 1 million. Like, that is... I honestly shocked. I thought this would easily pull, like, kind of a justified City Primeval kind of share, but there's not even that much leftover affection for Rick and Michonne, man.
I mean, we see that in our podcast audience, too. Even the people who have been with The Walking Dead for ages and should be primed to want to see this reunion actually see it, not just hear us talk about it, are just listening to our podcast, and they're not watching the show.
Right.
So they haven't done enough to inspire people to come back. And I think it's largely because our podcast listeners have heard from us that this is the same old, right? The same old people are making it. And they're making the same old type of thing. So why would they come back to something that they gave up a decade ago?
With a brief departure between like the midpoint of season 9 through the first couple episodes of season 11, the walking, mm-hmm. like I would have been interesting to see if Angela Kang were given these properties to do something with.
Sure.
Because I just think she's
just got a
better
handle on
this.
Does she want to write the exact same story she did over with the Commonwealth? Because that's what we're looking at.
It's a super Commonwealth, brothers world.
What's there to get excited about other than Rick and Michonne reuniting? And they did that in the first episode.
Yeah, I like seeing the other side of this. I do like. It seems like there's like I do like this. That seems like they're in an impossible position. Like, I do not believe that Rick and Michonne can take down a CRM.
No, I don't either.
Especially now that Jadis is onto them.
Uh-huh.
I went and I decided, like, you know what? I'm in the mood for some pain. I'm going to hit up the old Walking Dead Wikipedia and look up Jadis.
Oh, no.
Jadis is a nonsense character that does not make any sense. There's no way to look at her backstory and rotate that kaleidoscope to make both her being a warrant officer, Secret Service agent of the CRM, and her being a trash person that spoke in broken caveman.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way. And then her identity of Anne during Alexandria is the pivot point of this just mess of a character that, as far as I can tell, has had 3 different brain transplants, total brain transplants. And maybe that's what the hair is an effort to cover up all the crisscrossing brain surgery, because she's got a reverse scalp brother scars. Martine from Shogun. What?
I don't know, man. It's terrible. It's terrible.
That's a Hulu project. That's a Hulu FX, not AMC. They didn't just literally shave Jadis's hair and glue that onto Brother Martin's head, because they've got, I'm telling you, they've got the inverse haircut of each other.
It's It's awful. It keeps getting worse. So this is probably a symptom of them really liking the people they work with as well, right? You want to bring back these characters. You want to bring back these actors in particular.
I like Pollyanna McIntosh.
Done good work. Yeah, no problem with her. Her character has been drug along the rocky gravel road of The Walking Dead so hard and so fast that now she's not even a real person to me. She's a Muppet haircut with whatever she's wearing this week because the costume designer decided, oh, she'd look good in this. She's not a character in the show. She's ridiculous.
You cast her to be Kermit the Frog in a trash play of The Muppet Show, and that's what you got. Kermit the Frog in a garbage Kermit the Frog cannot be a military officer leading an effective military organization. I'm sorry. In a farce, maybe, and like a Muppet movie with Adam Sandler or some shit, but not something you take seriously.
No. And they've had to shoehorn her in so many different places now.
And now we've been reduced to Waldorf and Statler. The circle is complete. We've all become Muppeted by this fucking show.
We will all be Muppets eventually, Aaron.
Yeah.
You either die young or you live long enough to see yourself become a Muppet.
To see yourself become plush.
All right. I think that's about all I got to say about this episode. Don't shamble away. We'll be right back.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
The hungry ones will feast. We're back with The Watching Dead.
Yeah, shall we get into the episode? Shall we wade in? Because there's some good parts. There's a lot of good... That's not about a egregious, crazy character that was created on the spot, and Jadis is actually quite good. I must say two words to introduce this first scene, Jim. Mm-hmm. Gas Man.
Yeah, there's a whole Seinfeld episode about this guy.
Is there? Because I have confession.
No, I might be confusing Ass Man with Gas Man.
Going to say, I've known a few of those. I've never known a Gas Man of this type before. This dude, I was wondering, like, what the hell is a Gas Man? Because Michonne refers to a Gas Man like she knows what they're talking about. Like, she knows what she's talking about. And the characters in universe, like, I'm not even going to touch that. Mm-hmm. But, like, I did, you know, I got on the old again, Walking Dead Wiki is there. I was there for Jadis anyway. Why not? Check out Gas Man. I guess there is some kind of crazy lore about this Gas Man that was in either a video game project or maybe a fan project, a fan made movie, and that they're like playing homage to this or something. But
okay,
my backstory for this guy is right at the apocalypse. He was like one of these helpy helpersons who had a bunch of gas. Like, he would tie gas cans to himself and walk, you know, the people who were stranded going down the highway trying to get out of town or something. He would give them enough gas to get to the next station or something. He was like some kind of crazy Good Samaritan. Yeah. And makes he's sense. Gone dead, and now he's just
eternally
walking. Well,
he died from huffing the gas fumes. he walked around with the caps open. I got to be quick. I got to be ready. Yeah. And then he huffed all the fumes and died.
Which made him highly flammable. So when he is later hit by a screaming stick, which we will get into... I know you people are very excited to see how someone brought down a helicopter in the apocalypse. We're going to find out. He's hit with a screaming stick. And another thing, again with Gimple, why is this cold open effective?
Well, it mirrors the I am Dana or whatever that she's going to do at the end. So you've got the book ending, right? You always love the book ending in these shows.
But it's also that's already bookended by the interview she does with the caravan people.
Uh-huh.
Because it starts off with I am Michonne.
I thought that's what
I'm talking about. I'm talking about the gas, like literally 30 seconds of the gas man shambling towards the thing and see, like, it's just so that they can have a random explosion catch Michonne by surprise and be like, haha, see, we justified it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a cool visual, but they do it again. You're right. Later on when the gas man shows up in the actual episode. I don't know, man.
I feel like
Breaking Bad showed AMC, hey, cold opens are where it's at. It's awesome. Let's do a crazy cold open that no one expects.
You know,
and
how
then
in
they
Stranger
just
Things,
ran with that for 15 years.
Yeah. You know how in Stranger Things when Elle uses her powers and like a trickle of blood will come out her nose or her ear? I think that's what happens to Scott Gimple when he doesn't have a sequence out of chronological order. It's like he's just an editing bay. It's all chronological. Could you just grab that scene and put it up in the cold open? And then it's like, oh god, the blood pressure drops. Mm-hmm. Like the monitors in AMC's headquarters go back to green status, and that's the only thing that can explain the compulsion to tell things out of order.
Yeah, I don't know if they think that this is like Walking Dead signature style. Maybe that's the thing. Like, if we don't have cold opens, people will not understand that they're watching The Walking Dead.
You know what? Let's go with that. The Walking Dead deserves a signature style.
It has one in my mind, for
Christopher
sure.
Christopher Nolan, but dumb. Michonne is interviewed by the leader of the caravan people, who I can only describe as a timeshare condo salesperson.
Oh, my God. Her hard sell to Michonne was killing me.
This feels like Michonne is walking down a boardwalk and an attractive middle-aged woman came up and said, how would you like free tickets to Disney World? All you got to do is listen to a 15-minute speech on the many benefits you would get from joining our community. And she just like, Michonne's exasperated. The people she just saved from this community, they're just give her a fucking horse. Just give her, like, it's literally the text of this. I love it. I love it.
I've met this woman in Rome outside the Colosseum. She was handing out bracelets trying to get people to pay $12 to donate for some shitty 25-cent gotcha bracelet.
Yeah.
That's the kind of sell that was happening here.
I've had that same experience, but the person ran up and attached a bracelet to me before I even knew what was happening, and then it's like that's a hard sell.
It's when you take it off, you toss it to them, and you walk away.
But you know what? Just like in timeshare condos, all is not well with the structure of this caravan of courage. There's a lot of malcontents, a lot of dissatisfaction with the philosophy of this joint.
Yeah, the Caravan of Courage being this group never stops moving. They say that. They never stop moving. In fact, they don't stop moving even when they lose relatives who... It's like the Harfoots in Rings of Power. It's exactly the same. They will leave your ass behind, but they have no real reason to do it. The real reason here is we might encounter people if we stop, or...
It's a caravan of cowards, because it makes sense if you are a small group that's trying to stay nimble and like, look, we don't have the resources. If like we encounter a herd, we just got to keep moving. But this is like that fucking Infernal Machines movie where they have like a city on wheels or some shit. Like this is a like and even from within the group, the consensus is we are strong enough that we don't have to do this bush league shit anymore. It's just the timeshare lady has got moral cowardice.
Yeah, so the thing about being nimble is you're supposed to be ready to move at the drop of a hat, right? You're supposed to be prepared if you need to flee. You don't constantly need to be fleeing. I mean, that's just a huge waste of resources. Where do they get the gas? We're 48 years into the apocalypse here. Where do they get the fucking gas to keep their RVs running? To keep, like, are they using all horses? Because I swear I saw some actual trucks.
There was a couple. Yeah, there was a fair amount of like Cadillacs being pulled by a team of oxen or whatever. But there was a lot that were horseless carriages. And I don't know where they're getting the gas either, if they're constantly moving, you know?
Yeah, this is another thing The Walking Dead does. And it's kind of ridiculous. It's even more ridiculous later on, because they're talking about the honey. And they're like, oh, my husband promised, or my boyfriend promised that he'd get me some honey because I was having a craving for it. Oh, apparently honey stays good, you know, forever. It never goes bad. So they sweated the detail on honey and whether or not it goes bad, but not fucking gasoline.
Right.
Which should have expired a decade ago. Like,
oh, no,
what the hell?
I saw National Geographic that in Pharaoh Tutmose's tomb that they had a 5-gallon jerry can of gas, and they were amazed that they threw the generator and it just powered the lights. It was crazy.
It's
gasoline and honey. They never expire.
Yeah.
Lighter
fluid, because this guy's flicking on his lighter like there's no. Like, there's no fuel shortage. Like, there's no apocalypse.
I did wonder. And plus, those things, like, if you don't ever light them, they go dry in a week or two. Because they're not, like, any kind of, like, tight container. It's just, like, a sponge that soaks up the whatever. I forget what the fuel. You can burn almost anything in there. Rubbing alcohol. I forget what the Zippo lighter actually has in it. Butane's a gas. It's some kind of liquid. But anyway, yeah, like, I don't know where the hell he would get that. And, like, during their chlorine gas ordeal, he's just, you know, I guess in the mall would probably have a bunch of that shit. Light sun, and what kind of lighter fluid.
I know, like, what it's supposed to mean, right? When he gets stressed, when he gets worried, when he wants to blow things up or something, he starts looking into the flame. And that reminds him of danger, right?
It's the pyro.
I get what they're doing with it, but sweat some details here, please.
Yeah. They do have a detail that is pertinent, is everyone, you know, you might think that the timeshare lady is just fucking with her about these hordes, but everyone seems to agree that, like, oh, you don't want to go north during this time of year because you have 5-mile wide hordes that move from city to city. So it's a bad deal. So the people, Nat here. The little person who is a master inventor, it turns out, really likes his new friend, Michonne. So he promises something special. She gives him a night to work on it. Her pick of horses plus some custom armor. I got to say, if someone came up and said, hey, trust me, you're going to want to spend the night with us. I want to introduce you to the Screaming Sticks. I'd be gone. The second that they want me to just close my eyes around Screaming Sticks, I'm gone.
They're a surprisingly noise-focused society here. They call them Screaming Sticks, presumably because of the noise they make. And we will come to learn that the Screaming Sticks are the missiles that Michonne fired at the helicopter. And they also call the Walking Dead Wailers. That's their name for them.
Yeah, which is, I'm pretty sure, a hockey team. The Wailers. The Wailers. Every group's got to have their own name for them, you know? They pull an all-nighter and they equip her this armor and the horse. And they're all, like, super bullish about her finding Rick. And Nat, you can tell it bothers that he's letting Michonne go because, you know, she's now 1/3 of the people he can stand on Earth. He gives her a journal to keep in touch with her kids because she's out of radio range. And then the next day, Michonne rides off and finds the hordes, just like the timeshare condo lady said she would. And she has mixed results in dealing with them until Nat and company ride to her rescue.
Do you remember what the Shoto stuff is about? She keeps saying Shoto into her radio, and I don't remember what that was.
So Michonne's code word is Daito, and the big sword, and Shoto is the little samurai swords. It's good that we're getting into this because of the shogun of it all.
We're gonna need the Walking Dead to lean on to understand the
Walking
shogun.
Dead gave us like 0.5% of the knowledge we'll need to cover. Shogun, and that's not nothing.
All right, why does she get so close to this horde? I mean, is she ready to just run right into this horde and commit suicide? Because it is suicide. I don't care how many screaming sticks or chlorine gas bombs you have, nothing is touching this horde.
I thought this was a little crazy. That, like, that's one thing I've how are they going to make it seem like Michonne is properly balancing concern for her children, which again are being raised by Daryl and Negan,
mm-hmm.
and her love and desire to get Rick home safe. And they don't really do it, because they told me the story of a woman who was, yeah, fuck it. I'm going to walk through this 5-mile horde of walkers on foot with my samurai sword. I'm going to stand my ground. I'm not going to go back and get my horse and try to go ride around. This is it. And it doesn't, it makes sense. It just, I don't know. It's not something that I can really understand being a parent myself.
Right. They're trying to tell us she has this insane drive, right? Like, she's either going to do this or die trying. And that's not a rational or good decision for a mother to make.
Especially since it's a dangerous world. I would believe there's a multitude of dangers. Even a strong, smart, capable person like Michonne, who's taking all the chances, and I, as a reasonable person, be like, you know what? She thought she could win this fight, and she didn't, and things look bad. But there's no interest in this writer's room to construct that. They don't even think in that terms. They don't even think of the fucking dilemma that they've put this character into. I don't get it. It's... because, like I said, you could put her into a situation where, like, you know what, Michonne saw a edge that she thought she had, and it was a reasonable chance to get through, and she took it in good faith, but shit went bad because it's a zombie apocalypse, and then Nat and them come to ride to the rescue. But they just, no, she was just good. They said it was a suicide. It's a suicide run. She knew it was a suicide run. She's going on a suicide run. It's so stupid.
And for people who didn't watch this episode, this is the biggest sea of walkers we've ever seen. I mean, it's nestled between two mountain ridges down in a valley, and it is teeming. It is
far as the eye can see, like an ocean. You can't see the shoreline of it on the other side.
You would need some kind of nuclear explosion to take out this number of walkers.
So, she fires up her first screamer stick.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes right into the middle of walkers, and it does some pretty good damage. And more importantly, it diverts the crowd. That screaming sound, I'm thinking, is like a human sounding scream, and the walkers kind of instinctively follow it and go to the fire and the commotion. So Michonne sees a way that, like, oh, maybe if I have enough of these screamer sticks, I could get through. I like that.
She doesn't have enough.
I don't think she does either. No. And then the gas man comes, and he has been lit by her first scream stick. And just as she processes what she's seeing, he explodes, and his head hits her like a cannonball square in the tits and knocks her clean off her horse.
Pretty good. I like
that. So at this point, I'm like, I'm not thinking Michonne is a suicidal idiot, but as soon as she gets hit by that, like, it knocks off her horse, she kind of looks around to see if the horse is around. She sees it's not, so she just gets in a samurai stance with a sword and awaits to take 5 billion walkers on by herself. Purple fire erupts on the horizon to the east and to the west, and like Moses before the Red Sea, the walkers part into two halves.
Yeah,
and she's, you can see, there's, I'm like is she dreaming? Or are they suggesting something miraculous has happened? And as I'm processing this, no, Nat rides through with his red wagon full of magic. I mean, he's like Gandalf. He's like a pint-sized Gandalf.
Yeah, did Gandalf have conjuring abilities? Because this man has conjured so much flammable material.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, combustible material, too, not just flammable. Like, you can burn wood. You could chop down a lot of trees and burn them. But
sure.
This shit is... I mean, I cannot stress how far away these explosions are. They are miles and miles and miles away, and they erupt like several hundred feet into the air and continuously burn that high and that hot
bright
in purple
flames. Yeah.
I've never seen a purple flamed anything. I'm sure there are substances that make purple flames.
Potassium salts. Yeah.
His fourth log would have been purple. but...
That's a Back to the Future 3 deep cut, if you're wondering.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. But I just don't know where he gets the fuel. And they're going to do a throwaway line later. He's going to come up and he's going to say to Michonne, oh, the gasoline, you know, you can find that in buildings, trucks, whatever. It's out there.
Yeah, like, all the chemicals you need, it's out there. Yeah, I mean, this is the part I believe the most. Like, he is an old school firebug and did this for his own amusement, and then his kind of adoptive stepfather turned him into a MacGyver type. So, like, maybe he is building the fuel for everything. Like, he is.
Well, when does he get it? When does he get it? Because they're constantly moving. Does he go away from the group? Does he take a caravan out and go and find gas and then report back to the regular caravan?
They must have some outriders, and it seems like they stop for the night, all right? They can't be constantly moving.
No, they say they never stop. Never stop. Mm.
Yeah, I don't know. I was actually kind of hoping to find out more about these caravan people, because the concept seemed cool, but...
Too bad.
So yeah, Nat and company ride up, and they said they have a horse and a beer for her waiting. That night, as they're camping, they talk about the purple flames... knowing when to go at the right time, and turns out Bailey is the lady. Aiden is the man that Michonne saved at the tail end of season 10 of The Walking Dead. Turns out Bailey's pregnant. That's exciting.
Oh shit, I thought they were the other way around. I thought it was Bailey is the boyfriend.
It could. I mean, it's one of these these crazy trendy names where honestly I couldn't swear, but I feel like Aiden is slightly more of a boy's name and Bailey's. Well, what the hell am I even saying? You're right. It could be either way.
No idea. Yeah. So we find out that she's pregnant, which they're going to do absolutely the most and absolutely nothing with later. Here's where it started to really sink in that, and I found out later that Danai Gurira is actually a part of writing this season, which
yes.
I think is, I don't know how involved she is, but I think that's a good thing in general. Like, you want the actors playing the characters invested, right? And mm-hmm. one of the things with them being producers for so long and them being on this show for so long is they really get to know those characters. Mm-hmm. And you might have directors who come in and out of the show, whatever. But they are probably a pretty good guiding light for who their character is. I also felt like here there might have been some a desire felt to broaden Michonne's character, because Michonne has largely been a very dour, very angry character. And mm-hmm. you don't often get to see her even crack a smile, let alone... have banter and joke back and forth with characters. And I felt like this was a real change in her character that didn't come from time we saw on screen. It was just there because Danai didn't feel like being that sad Zach anymore.
Yeah. She gets a belly laugh.
A situation where she should not be joking around and having fun.
True. Yeah. And she gets the belly laugh in this episode. She also gets to cry as hard as I've ever seen a human being cry. So, like, I think they're clearly some of the stuff that they used to lure Andrew and Danai back are like, hey, you can really uncork and throw your fastballs and maybe have a song and dance number. That's the other thing you can do with actors to reel them in. But
sure. Musical.
And then
episode.
She is the credited writer, the sole credited writer of the fourth episode.
Okay.
So
she's gonna be heavily involved in that one. Yeah, it's just a thing where like I know that these actors are all super charismatic. You kind of have to be like a big name actor in Hollywood. She doesn't get to show it on this show ever. I feel like it wasn't really warranted in these scenes, even though I think the guy playing Nat is also extremely charismatic. And they almost get there just through the sheer force of how good these actors are.
I'm glad you said that.
They almost get to me believing it, but it felt like inappropriate for her to be laughing and joking when she's on a mission like this.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like I meant to say that when we were talking about the beginning, that I really like this Matthew Jeffers as Nat. I think he is charismatic. And like, if they had just not done the Walking Dead treatment to him, if he could just be a regular person, that could level with Michonne, I think I would have liked this episode a lot better. It's just a third layering of character. Like, every single time he gets a speaking role, he's got to take out that lighter, flip it, look into the middle distance, and, you know, get real dramatic about a backstory that he's uncorking. And it's like, it's just a little too much. It's a little too much.
Yeah.
So the other thing that we find out is, like, this constant theme of knowing when to go at the right time. Like, clearly Nat and Bailey and Aiden are haunted by the callousness and the cowardice that they put up with, or maybe they thought that's the only way that the world works. And Michonne saying, "Ah, that's not the way we work. You should come to Alexander, where everything's perfect all the time." ask us about our jail and our serial killing madman that we have captured, and the
recent starvations. Yeah.
But anyway, and Michonne turns it around on them, where they're kind of constantly saying, "Hey, you should go back and take care of your kids." She, now that knows that Bailey is pregnant, she's like, "Well, you should leave. I can tell you how to get to Alexandria. You're like a week away. I can tell you what to say." And they're like, "Oh, but we're so close to this Bridger's terminal. We just want to see how it ends. We just want to see how it ends." So the next day, Nat uncorks the Walking Dead character actor special backstory monologue. Being rudely interrupted by a chlorine gas attack by the CRM. Patrol helicopter spots him overhead and just drops loads on him. Boom, boom, boom.
Yeah. Yeah. I the characterization of this danger guy really had me rolling for a minute until I realized, oh, maybe he wasn't actually any of these things. But apparently he couldn't load his truck. He had a bum shoulder. Kept him from loading anything into his truck. He chronically forgot, to the point where it was a real problem in his life. He chronically forgot to turn off the stove and the sink. And he was attracted to a mess of a woman? Is that what I'm to understand? That his mother was just a real train wreck?
And he married? Yeah, he's middle name's Danger. You know, he sees... He sees this train wreck of a woman with this son that's out in the woods setting fire to everything. And he's like, "Yeah, this is." Episode. That's the plain telling of the episode. Also, like, even like Nat even says, like, "Yeah, this guy saw all this crazy shit and's like, yeah, I want in." Did they tell us what Danger's backstory was?
I don't think so.
Was he a military vet? Because I kind of expect, because I watched this last night and I went to bed and I got up this morning and did my note taking pass, and I kept on thinking that there, and I'm like, it seems like that they left something out. Like, this guy was an old Hollywood stuntman, because I'm trying to think of, like, if he's a stuntman and he's kind of like old and he's got, you know, he's got some nagging injuries, maybe took a couple blows to the head, so he's forgetful.
Sure.
But
I could see it.
No, they don't want to do that because that interferes with the other part of the story they want to tell, where nothing was wrong with Danger. He just invented all this shit to do so this kid would MacGyver himself a solution and focus him from setting things on fire, from destroying things to creating things. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's good.
Sure.
It's just, it needed a little bit more than 5 minutes to develop three different generations of characters to make this backstory work.
Yeah, 100%. I'm with you. Because I like that sentiment, the idea that he took his destructive behavior and routed it somewhere else into something productive, and that he keeps this lighter with him as a keepsake of that to keep him on that path. Yeah, I think that all works. That's great. It's just, it's so shortcutted. So shortcut in this episode.
Do you buy that someone can be fully engulfed in chlorine gas for several minutes and still live? Because I thought they also fucked. This is The Walking Dead again. They put in a situation where I thought everyone would die. And fair enough, almost everyone died. But
yeah, that's the thing that kills me, is everyone did die. Except the two people that they needed to live, because they're characters that have stories still to tell in this episode.
And I think they could, and they had the perfect explanation, because something stopped. And they have this small group of breakaway from the caravan people, and they're like going to the front to fix it. And Michonne and Nat stay back just to kind of have a conversation. So they're at the very tail of the column. So when the bombs start, they're able to just like they get a whiff of it, but they don't get fully engulfed like the other people do. And it was still, I don't know. I don't know why I do this. I did a lot of research to see like what is the survivability of something like that, and it doesn't seem good.
What is the recoverability? Because she's 100% by the end of this episode, and I don't know if they spend years in that mall or if they spend
an entire winter. Like they did a pretty good job at the skylight showing there's autumn leaves, and then there is snow, and then there is spring. So I think there's like 3 to 6 months that they spent in there.
I mean,
and
the scarring, the lung scarring.
Do you know
gas.
How long a full tank of oxygen lasts when it's being used for therapeutic breathing? If you were
probably
to guess.
Probably 2 days.
I was thinking maybe a week. It's 4 to 6 hours.
Christ. Okay. So they found a whole warehouse in this
mall. How much oxygen, or maybe Nat is doing an electrolysis and he's splitting water into hydrogen and oxygen on the side or something. They're doing their own deal after he gets a little bit better, but chlorine gas anyway. So they're able to get indoors, but they're in bad shape, and Michonne vows to get oxygen for everybody. She's really worried about Bailey, who is rasping and foaming at the mouth, and she says, "You should don't let your babies die like I did. My unborn baby die. You got to get back to your kid. You got to get back to your kid."
I hate this scene. This is a scene that gets worse every other scene after it. Because I thought, okay, this is the big showy moment for The Walking Dead, where Michonne has... Okay, Michonne barely talked to these people. It's said that, she saved her, you know, her and her boyfriend or whatever. Maybe she did at the end of her arc in The Walking Dead. I don't remember. But they make a huge deal about her death, like a huge deal. Michonne cries ugly over this woman. And I don't understand exactly. Look, I understand. Okay, she's got a kid. She's worried about Judith. It's hitting home for her. It didn't hit home for me as an audience member because I met this woman 4 minutes ago of screen time. Like, the only thing I know about this woman is that she was helpless and Michonne saved her. And now she wants her to have a horse. That's it. And she's pregnant. I'm not connected to this woman. This scene does not work at all because I'm not connected to this woman. I don't care how connected Michonne is. I have to be as a viewer, and I'm not.
Yeah. And it's funny because, like, they show a healthy reaction to this. Like, when Rick, you know, at the end is with Michonne and he feels like, you know, sees that Nat's dead and she's just, and he's like, "Oh, I'm sorry that your friend died." That's literally the reaction I have to all these people's deaths. Because why? Mm-hmm. Like, Michonne spent 6 months with Nat getting to know him. And, you know, arguably she'd be dead without him. I understand, but, like, they can't expect me to feel that way, especially about these two. Like, maybe Nat, okay, we're going to give you a whole episode of development, and we're really forcing it down, you know, force-feeding this stuff. But
my God, I mean, in the same episode, they want to have two tearful goodbyes and a tearful hello. It's like, it's too much. Yeah, it's too much too fast. It doesn't work.
Nat, as the seasons turn, rasped to us in voiceover that they were exposed to chlorine gas, that it burnt out their lungs and throats. It's going to take a while to get better. There's a montage of Michonne trying progressively to do push-ups to rehabilitate her body. And first she can't even do modified push-ups without being racked with coughs. Then she's able to do a couple of regular push-ups painfully. But then... You know, they're also having a meal and they're talking about philosophy and Nat also, again, they go back to this. You got to know when the right time to go is. You got to know when to let go of your dream and pursue pragmatism, I guess.
Yes. And this is all happening as a montage underneath the Kenny Rogers needle drop. Know when to hold them, know when to fold them. It's not, but it should be.
Oh, we forgot there's one nifty scene I liked where Nat couldn't kill Aiden, you know, when he turned into a zombie, and they tied Bailey to the bed. but he had built himself like a little flaming moat out of the perfume counter at the mall that they had stayed in, and he had set it on fire because that's his deal.
Yeah,
and it
Shaun
was just keeping
style.
Aiden at bay until Michonne got there to kill him. I thought that was kind of a nice touch. But at the end of the scene, Michonne explains that, look, you're strong enough to go to Alexandria. I don't need you with me. You should go to Alexandria and I'll go to the ferry. And he says, no, this is literally the only thing I have to live for now is your story and seeing it to the end. So you can't dismiss me like that. It's fair enough. So Nat and Michonne make it to Bridger's terminal, but all they find is death and destruction. Nat gently tries to talk reality into Michonne, who seems to finally be ready to give up on the dream of Rick in favor of the reality of her little ones waiting at home.
Yeah, this is where she sees the safe harbor boat. Yeah.
And is this the scene where Rick gets recaptured? Like, is this the scene where he's barefoot in the mud and the CRM attacks? And like, this is like one of those mid-season post-credit reveals we got in The Walking Dead.
That could be the case. I don't recall seeing that cruise ship or whatever it is.
I don't either,
because it wasn't that big of a river either. I didn't think, like, you're not gonna have
true,
although I don't know, these ships go through canals in Venice, so whatever. I couldn't tell you, but probably
I wondered about like I felt like this Bridger's terminal was a, maybe it's a World Beyond location that they've hinted at or something, but like it felt like a moment where we're supposed to be like, oh my God, look at how fucked up and crazy it is. And I'm like, well, this is exactly how I'd look, expect every place to look in the zombie apocalypse. It's
right
when you see someone sweeping the streets, that's the rarity, you know?
One moment that I really do like here is when we see that Michonne has used her walker jaw trick to strap one of these walkers, a docile walker, onto the wagon so it can pull it itself. Because she was like, in the scene before, she said to Nat, you don't really expect me to pull this wagon, do you? And she said, or he says, yes. She doesn't pull the wagon. She gets a walker to do it. I love that touch.
Yeah, it's nice. And also explains how he's got his little magic wagon that he gets to pull behind him. I like the scene where she's going from like burnt corpse pile to burnt corpse pile trying to find it's, reminds me of the scene where like Aragorn and Legolas and Gimli are searching through the pile for their hobbits, you know, and the two towers. And did you know that when Denying Frustration kicks that helmet at the end and she falls to her knees and screams, it's actually because she broke her toe. That wasn't acting. And they left it in.
And Rick sees this, you know, from his helicopter, from his CRM helicopter, and he's thinking, you see a pile of bodies and you think that of me? I am the one who burns, Michonne.
I am the one that burns, yeah.
Yeah.
So Nat reveals a couple things, which I don't understand. Like, he, as far as I can tell, he never sees this phone. Did they cut this episode for time? Because at the end of this, after he sits there and waits her to sort through all the piles of corpses, and he's like, you know, this is the last time you knew your husband was alive. This place has obviously been overrun and everyone's been put to the torch. Did you know that the Japanese on your phone says, believe a little longer? I'm not sure how he knows that. How did she show it to him?
Not either.
Like, that would have been a nice scene for the firelight for him to, like, see her phone and kind of raise his eyebrows. You don't know why, but I don't know.
Yeah, the only time I recall seeing the phone so far is in Rick's episode last week.
Yeah.
Where he's got a pile of phones that he's getting rid of.
You're listening to The Watching Dead. We'll be right back.
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of Apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off badass season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints. Except, it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim. Order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar. Then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
Hey, it's time for another season of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? The premise is simple. A Gen Xer and a millennial watch old 80s action TV to see what still works and what doesn't. In previous seasons, we've done podcasts for Knight Rider, Airwolf, MacGyver, A-Team, and more. However, this year we're doing a very special season of Feeny. We're going back and reviewing the very special episodes of 80s and 90s sitcoms. Come cringe along with us as Hollywood tries to warn our families of the dangers of underage smoking, drug abuse, alcoholism, eating disorders, and much more. We start out with the episode of Boy Meets World where a high school kid gets sucked into a cult. Worlds collide as the Mr. Feeny finally makes an appearance on Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Join me and my buddy Jay each week for episodes full of nostalgia and secondhand embarrassment. And don't worry, a very special isn't your speed. We've also got some all-time classic Knight Rider episodes to close the season with. Find Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Each Wednesday on Bald Move Pulp, starting April 3rd. Keep your head down. Welcome back to The Ones Who Live. Well, just that he, you know, he's got this thing. It's like, you can do both. You don't have to give up on Rick. You don't have to be disloyal, but also without a lead to go on, you do have children who are definitely still alive and need you. Like, don't give up on Rick, but also go back to your kids. And there's a particularly fine piece of acting where Danai Gurira really sells someone giving up on someone they love. And I have been there. I have seen people be there. And this type of just like ugly crying, this extreme grief without any kind of shame or beauty, I think is always affecting. And I think she's particularly good job at just like, I believe that her soul is leaving her body as she's letting Rick go here.
Yeah. No, if this would be a bigger moment, if it was not punctuated by other similar moments that were less impactful. Because, I agree with you. She does a great job in this scene. And I think all that knowing when to go stuff. Yeah, it's if you didn't know by now, they say it for the ninth time here. So that's obviously the theme of the episode. But I like how
the episode's title's Gone. So like, you know, going gone. That's
right. I do like. Yeah, I mean, I guess I do like it the way that they had both of these characters give up on each other and then find each other. I don't like the way they found each other. I think it was
I don't either.
So coincidental. Just be unbelievable. And it had a layer of stupid on top that we'll talk about. But like, I think that's the appropriate place to have them as they're reunited. They have to have actually given up on each other because it's dramatically interesting. Now they have feelings of guilt. Now they have like, it's not just a happy reunion. It's a bittersweet one, you know, mostly sweet, but there's a tinge of that bitterness there that is what actually balances it out and makes it delicious and interesting to me.
I structurally love it. I love, like you said, them giving up on each other right as they find it. And I didn't have a huge problem with like the randomness of finding each other because, you know, like crazy shit happens, man.
Sure. It just happens all the time on this show, it seems.
And I also like that. You know, when you give up on someone like this, there's probably a cost to it. Like letting all that go, I think they're also opening the door to where maybe Michonne's not sure that Rick's the same man. Maybe Rick's not the same man because he did that same
question at the end of this.
Like it cost him to give that up too. Like,
yep.
So is there something to rebuild? Are they just kidding themselves? Those are really interesting conversation. I'm excited about the possibilities, the story. I'm probably setting myself up for disappointment, failure, but I am still interested in the possibilities of where they can go, and I'm hoping that they can rally for the second and third act of the series.
Yeah.
So the next day, completely empty, Michonne and Nat start journeying towards Alexandria. But wouldn't you know it, they see a hello flying low over the horizon, and they mutually decide to ambush it for justice for the caravanners. That's essentially the final scene from last week, except for we see it from Michonne's perspective, which I enjoyed, because I was like, how the hell did they down this helicopter?
I'm still like, how the hell did they down this helicopter?
But it does lead to a lovely reunion between Rick and Michonne before yet another tragedy strikes as Nat is killed in the aftermath. Let's talk about downing the helicopter.
So you were right. This is a homemade weapon. This is not some kind
of... It's a homemade weapon system, man. Like, this is some steampunk shit. This guy has built this backpack-fed missile launching system with a rail that he mounts to his hand, and it has a tripod that he can brace on. The problem is they built this prop with articulation and whatnot, because it's almost like a Tony Stark. It's like halfway to Tony Stark building something in the cave. This like exoskeleton he's got. They have him say, I've been practicing with this, and he aims, but he cannot get this thing to articulate anywhere close where he can look down the barrel.
Right.
So it's this bizarre thing where he squints with the one eye, but because of the way they built this thing, his arm cannot like swing in front of his eyes. So he's got this cockeye, walleye, 6-inch off axis.
With his head pressed up against a hot and getting hotter firework. Yeah, it's...
And I wondered, like, did no one notice this? This is like the fucking the bayonets in last year's Stormtrooper stuff. Like, did no one... Like, how hard would it be for a prop master? Like, if you had Adam Savage on the set, shit, that's a problem. Give me 15 minutes, some scrap metal, and I will have, like... a sighting system that will stick out 6 inches so he can aim like a little scope or something. He's got a monoscope. What?
Could he not just clip that in?
With 30 minutes and some PVC pipe and some spray paint, I could have made a sight for that thing. I don't understand. And there's so many close-ups of him clearly.
Yeah, yeah. This is, what is it, season four, season five? This is Abraham flipping that van over. Over again, where they're just like, we'll fix it in post. We'll edit. We'll make that work in editing.
And no one
did. Absolutely did not work in editing. No. I mean, half the time he's aimed mostly at the ground when he's supposed to be targeting this helicopter. Like I said, he's got his head pressed up against a hot firework that's going to shoot off. I just simply do not believe that anyone could down a helicopter with this weapon. I don't believe
it. Unguided rocket. Like, I know it happened. The thing is I know it happens. Like, that's Black Hawk Down is essentially using an RPG in an unguided fashion to shoot a helicopter out of the sky. Happens all the time. Happened in Afghanistan. Happened in Iraq. It can happen.
Sure.
But that is a weapon system designed to do that thing. And does it not have some kind of seeking to, maybe?
And at the very least, it probably has targeting that will help you lead the rocket the way you need to.
Yeah, it'll have like the scope will have like markings and elevation and things like that.
It has predictable firing patterns. I mean, this guy's got a fuse. He has no idea when it's going to go off. So he's got to track the helicopter in real time.
True.
And then like you said, he does not have a targeting system in any form here. He doesn't even have a scope.
I do like the from this side perspective when he shoots that first rocket, which we know goes into Rick's CO for like several seconds before. And he goes, oh, no, it's a dud. Well, it's not. Uh-huh. And then he puts a couple more in. And then, you know, like I said, it's just what happened last week. And then Michonne, after they disable most of the guys, she goes and dispatches them. I did like her making each one of those deaths personal. Like, she gets up in their face and is like, look at me. And she just makes this insane face as she slowly slits these guys' throat with her Daito. Mm-hmm. Until she gets to Rick. And, of course, Rick is not dead. He's actually here just after the day after she gave up on him. And she says, I found you. He says, I'm not with them. She says, I know. I thought the reactions, the music, it's rare. Like, I critique people's passionate kissing on television. Do you see that? Like, every time that you're like, oh, that's not a passionate kiss. This looks like their brother and sister trying to kiss each other. This is like a old, wrinkly grandparent trying to kiss a 7-year-old grandchild kind of moment. I've always thought these people had great chemistry, mm-hmm. and it's on display.
Yeah, this is still powerful. Even in an episode loaded with moments like this, this still worked for me. Having read feedback, I know it didn't work for everyone, but I felt it. And it comes down largely to the acting, because the episode, I mean you have to like really start to feel, I wish they had done more to connect this to Michonne's real struggle, her real journey. It wasn't mm-hmm. just that she encountered a sea of walkers that she couldn't get through. Right. I wish there was more hardship. I wish this was like a modern Tomb Raider game, where she's just, it's a harrowed journey. But even without that, I remember, you know, all the anguish she had over losing Rick, and it all comes mm-hmm. back in this scene. So
the previous
well
one helps a lot. And I also just think it's like so the situation's crazy, but if this happened to you in real life, that seems like the day after you psychically and emotionally and mentally give up ever seeing a person alive. You shoot down a helicopter that just gorges a bunch of soldiers, and the last one that's alive happens to be that person.
Mm-hmm.
It's insane. It's an insane reaction. It's played that way. The only problem I have is it's not let breathe, because Nat stumbles up and says, oh my God, is that him? Are you sure he's still him? And he gets shot through by one of the dying soldiers. And then Rick is also has to go into high-speed explanation mode, where it's like, oh God, they're coming. We don't have time to do anything. You got to pretend to be someone else. You got to trick them into thinking that you're not strong. You're not a leader. You're a follower.
You're a B, not an A. Yeah.
You're a B, not an A.
I like this a lot. This mode switch that he has to do in that moment.
Yeah.
And has to teach her to do in that moment is really good.
And he keeps on, like, it's like a shit sandwich. It's like, okay, there's this bad situation. You just got to trust me. Okay, I trust you. Okay. Now, I also got to put a gun on you. You got to turn around. I got to put a gun on. And the way he's like, I'm sorry. I love you. It's just like, it sounds like a husband is desperately trying to get his wife to go along with something that she probably shouldn't go along with. But I also like the reaction where they have a tight shot of her, like, going from, like, what the fuck have I got myself into, to this, like, fierce smile. Because she just has this rock solid belief that her and Rick are together again, and what could possibly stop them? You know?
The same thing that stopped Rick, even though he cut his hand off. I mean, he's making promises he knows that he cannot deliver on, because he's tried for years
to get away from these people. He suffers from the same delusion where he believes in the ones that live in Rick and Michonne so much that, like, he thinks this is, they kept me down when I was alone, but we'll figure something out. Though with the combined power of the Grimes, no one can stand.
Yeah. I think it's logistically harder to pull off now. When you were alone, it would have been much easier to escape. Now you have two people that you have to get out. That's logistically more than double the problems.
Yeah. I also love the scene where he's like, do you still have anything that ties you to Alexander? Anything at all? Anything at all? And she's like, well, I guess I got this journal. There's radio. Of course, your phone you carved for me. And I got, and she goes, and then she's like, and your boots. And you, the face he makes at your boots, he's like,
weirdo.
There's this kind of like, what? Yeah. Like, have you been, sleeping with my boots, Michonne? You've been sniffing my boots.
Yeah. You drug my boots from Virginia to Pennsylvania. Why?
Because she's going around. That reminds me of the other scene that where she's looking at the corpse piles and she's comparing feet. Like, she's like, could this be Rick's feet? Are these the God. Feet of my love, Rick Grimes, holding up the cowboy boots to see? So she's taken into custody and she makes it through the CRM screening process with flying colors, apparently. And she's entered into consignment. She's got the Wolverine, the X-Men letter jacket. It's what it looks like to me. It's what they always wear in the movies, right? Mm-hmm. With the orange stripes. And Rick eventually finds her after she's made a consignee and hijacks her for a hot makeout and 411 sesh. What'd you think, Jim?
I was pretty disappointed that we didn't get to hear what Michonne decided to call the walkers. Because Rick tells her in that previous scene, okay, you have to not be you. You have to make up a fake name, a fake backstory, and I think smartly, a different thing to call the dead. But they never tell us what that is. I'm sure we'll see it in a future episode, but I got my eye on it.
Here's the thing. During the writer's strike, the Walking Dead writer's room got an ironclad, locked up guarantee that they cannot be made to make up more than one fake name for a zombie per episode. They're like, there's too fucking many. And between Daryl Dixon and this show, I've come up. There's not that many things to call a fucking zombie, guys. You can't squeeze blood from a stone. So
the bleeders. You know,
The bleeders. The rotters, the stinkers.
I mean, the rotters, they definitely call them that, yeah.
The
whalers now. I'm sure she's just going to take the whalers, right?
The whalers, the shamblers.
I'm going to be so disappointed when it's just the whalers and nothing better than that.
Yeah, it's just the whalers. I mean, I did like how she kind of blended in a bunch of different true facts. Like, she's from a large group.
Huge mistake. Make up entirely fake backstory, because otherwise you're going to confuse the two. She says she's from Georgia, which they almost certainly know Rick was from Georgia, right? That right there alone is like, okay, we need to look at this a little more closely. They're both from the same place.
She's got Morgan Bostaff, and you know Rick's complaining about Morgan. Yep. Like, this guy who wouldn't shut up about fucking clearing, and then goat cheese, and then he does a pacifist, and almost fucking Bostaff, and she just remixes elements from different survivors, and they make it a point that she's being observed by an unseen party. More on that later. And you know, it's like they make out passionately when he takes her to the motor pool, essentially, of the CRM, and she finds out about his Doc Johnson hand, and she's like, what's up with this? He's like, oh, that's from the last times I tried to get away. She's like, the last times? Which, the way it was worded, I don't know why she keyed so hard on that. Like, if he said the last time I tried, but even then, it's like, is this the last time I tried? There's nothing that says, and I gave up on you. They needed some other combination of words to convey that, because she pounced on, what do you mean the last time you escaped? What if it was like 3 days ago, man? Mm-hmm. And then I also really liked how he asks about Judith and how she is, and she says she's, and kind of laughs, and he gets concerned, and she goes, she's us, Rick, because she totally is. Does Rick give a shit about RJ? Does anyone in the show give a shit about RJ? Does anyone know that Rick and Michonne have a naturally born son who's called Rick fucking Jr.?
No.
Was she pregnant when Rick got blown up at the bridge? I didn't think she was.
The day after Michonne left, Daryl renamed him to Daryl Jr. He's DJ now. Forget
he's
it.
DJ,
RJ,
of course.
Yeah. Rick ain't coming back. I'm going to name him Daryl. Yeah.
I think you might be right, because I sometimes think the show completely, and I know he one time he said both, but it's all Judith. Okay, is she okay? How is she doing? Is she okay? Like, I just,
which, if you're Michonne, that should offend you, right? I mean, he's still clinging to Lori. He's still clinging to this straw hair, can't drive
Also, our son is fine, Richard. I want you to know that bust out his full government name on him. And they come up with all this like, hey, you know, I can tell you the like she's us, Rick. The rest we can get away. And he comes up with this whole elaborate scheme about passing notes and you got to destroy it and all this stuff. It doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. And also as a I guess a token of his goodwill, he gives her Nat's lighter that says danger on it. And she also tells him that these are bad people. And is there any way we can stop it? And he says, no, no, God, no. Yeah.
The first realistic assessment of a threat that I've seen on this show.
And I believe I don't know if I buy them taking down a CRM, man.
I'm That's... reserving judgment. I always like to give them the ability to tell their story effectively if they can do
sure.
it.
Yeah.
But I'm skeptical.
They're going to have to really tell a story about internal turmoil. Like that, because that's the thing that helped with the Commonwealth is that they had this elaborate 1% system where everybody was on the bottom except for the ultra wealthy. And they weren't just getting by. They were living like lavish, like red carpet fucking party type stuff. Literal red carpet party with journalists. It was crazy. But they only have 6 episodes. I don't see how they can possibly tell that story. And I just don't believe 2 people can take down 200,000 people with a fucking well-equipped army with air power. Like, fucking Eugene's going to show up in, like, Ewok gliders and drop rocks on them, and then it's going to be... I don't know, man. I don't know if
she's
got
a backpack full of screaming sticks. Maybe. Maybe.
So as we enter our final scenes, it seems someone is watching Michonne. She also gets to a high vantage point and sees for herself the full might of the CRM. Their extensive airfields and helicopters support. It doesn't seem like they are scraping by. They are running a full fucking air wing out of this.
Yeah, dozens of helicopters at least.
Various, like Chinooks, Blackhawks. I can't tell if they're Cobras or Apaches. Attack helicopters, tons of vehicles, tons of military trucks. Just like the amount of fuel and bullets and everything they must have.
Oh, can I just mention something about these helicopters? So I wasn't sure last week. I didn't go back and like check after I had the thought. The helicopter they're flying in is a goddamn attack helicopter. It has missiles and guns loaded on it.
You say what you and then I'm going to disagree with you, but
it certainly has armor. There is no chance in hell, now that I know what this weapon is, there's no chance in hell that a bottle rocket with a pointy tip, a pointy metal aluminum tip or whatever, is getting through the skin of this helicopter. No chance.
Okay. Are you aware that the helicopter to drop the bombs is not the same type of helicopter that Rick was flying? Because Rick's flying a Black Hawk, and what dropped the bombs, like, because I think these, like, Cobras and Apaches do have, like, the steel bathtub.
What, drop the bombs?
Yeah, the drop the bombs, the chlorine bombs. That's
yeah,
a
I'm
different
not talking
type
about
of
the chlorine chopper. I'm talking about
so,
this
you think
chopper.
Black Hawks have armor? Or Hueys?
Yeah. Yeah, helicopter will have armor. Any kind.
I thought...
If this was a news chopper, sure, I buy it, but it's not.
I thought, and I might be wrong, that most Blackhawks essentially can be penetrated with small arms fire. Like, they're just essentially
This is not small arms fire.
And...
This is a bottle rocket with a pointy tip.
It's a steel... It looks like a missile to me, man. Like, it's not like a cardboard tube...
It's
with
a whole
Easter egg on the top of it.
I mean, okay, maybe it's a metal pipe, but it's fired with fireworks. I mean, off a rail that I would use to construct a freaking, I don't know, picture frame. Like, this isn't heavy duty stuff.
You're not buying it. I am also not buying it. My only disagreement with you is the armor level of the helicopters.
Okay.
That's
I really hope we didn't get any feedback on that. I really hope somebody does know about this stuff.
I know we have a Walking Dead fan that flies helicopters for the for the military. So anyone with that Air National Guard experience, chime in. So anyway, as I said, someone's watching Michonne, and that someone turns out to be Jadis with an even stupider haircut.
God.
And she extorts Rick with the knowledge of Michonne's true identity. And he's like, oh, this is already a tough situation. I'm really in it now.
And then the episode ends with her pardoning her language and saying, Rick, what the screw are you doing?
You know, and this is a good sign. I don't even realize when The Walking Dead says fuck anymore. Like, it's fully integrated into the experience.
Do you remember my reference? Like, the train scene from decade ago.
A's and B's.
Oh, my God. Where AMC couldn't have them say they don't know who they're fucking with.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, clearly not the only thing wrong with the series, but that was...
Sure. That was a signpost.
Especially
right
on this
there.
Show where I can see a man get torn apart alive screaming by dead monsters in loving detail. I can see their hands reach into his stomach and like grab his belly button, just open it up like a burrito, like an overstuffed Chipotle burrito.
Like a handbag. Oh, yeah.
But if I heard see the word fuck or saw a nipple, my ears would fall off and my eyes would shoot out of my head. I could. Yeah. That's the one
and
thing.
And probably
I
hit someone like a cannonball, knock them off their horse.
Knock a TV sensor straight off their horse.
Yep.
This Jade, like I said, I looked into just Jade's character and like either end of the kaleidoscope makes sense, but I don't understand how she could have been a CRM citizen and soldier, escaped from the CRM, which we find out is impossible to do, live for several years as a trash monster person, speaking broken English and as some kind of like art installation project. Get
that
shut down.
Weren't they living undercover there or no?
Okay, then I need someone to explain to me what the fuck purpose this served. Because my Wikipedia reading, because I spent like 30 minutes reading on her character story. So then they reveal that she has this secret like locked box containing information that she was going to trade Negan and some of the other survivors for a trip back into this helicopter. We didn't even know what the CRM was back then. And Negan's able to knock her flare away so they can't see, and the helicopter leaves her there. Then at the end of the Rick story proper, she does successfully sell him off as a B to the CRM and gets back in there. It's like I also, it makes sense if they adopted this crazy woman and it turns out that she made an ideal soldier and she's like turned true, but like not. And so then apparently she becomes like this intelligence officer for the CRM, and she like knows all their dirty secrets. She knows all about the firebombing of Omaha, and she believes that it's all for the better. That it's kind of like, I guess the rationale in the world beyond was the CRM in Philly thinks that they essentially are propping up these other communities. They're doing dangerous and stupid things. And instead of letting them starve to death, they decide it's going to be, you know, a more merciful death to just kill them all at once. And again, I'm just reading this from the Wikipedia. So like, I don't know if there's like more to this story or not. But apparently... So, like, where are they going with this? Jadis is saying, you can't escape, Rick, because if you do, you know I'll have everyone in Alexandria murdered. Even the people that I like you and Michonne. Does she want to get out of this? Because nothing in the Wikipedia read I said suggested she's anything but insanely true blue for the CRM.
In that case, why haven't they destroyed Alexandria already? They certainly have the means. I thought that was their goal. They take the B's, they kill the A's, like...
Because Jadis, I guess, is playing a little bit on her own side somehow, right?
Okay. Like
there's a little bit of her
definitely
playing the long game
here. Unless this is a long con by John Locke, by Terry O'Quinn, Beale, and she's part of it, right? She
it
already
feels like
has
something
reported
she's
this
doing,
to Beale.
Yeah. It feels like this is something she's doing her own recognizance, but you're right. It could be a wheel within a wheel.
I don't know that this show is going to do that, but... That's kind of where
I forget
my head's
what their
at.
Long-standing deal was. I didn't see any of that when I was reading through her backstory.
Yeah, that's the thing. There were a couple of people who wrote in with full, basically synopses of Jadis's time during World Beyond, which she's been get a fair bit of her in World Beyond season two. That's Bill and Allison. I cut those emails. I didn't want to. If the show wants me to know it, the show will tell me, right?
Yeah, and I did. I left out some big spoilers, but I just like I just you know, I didn't want to read this thing for nothing.
Sure.
She also has a last name.
I just
want
to thank them for writing that in. I don't know. Some people might not want to know.
I can't remember what. Oh, it's Stokes. Her name now is Jadis Stokes, but she also says that Jadis isn't her real name. Jadis is just the identity that gave her strength, and she's honoring it. I'm like, your trash Muppet person is the personality that you
really
you really rely on, not your identity as a warrant officer of the CRM that you fanatically obey now. Like, it's Jadis.
I think her CRM appointed quarters is just full of trash art, just full of it.
JSS turns out stands for Jada Stokes somehow.
Jada Stokes somehow.
And yeah, that's, man, the episode.
Look
that's
forward to more of her, more of the trash Muppet.
Why the hair? Why the hair?
It made sense when
she was just being deliberately weird in her trash community, but now it's like, do people salute or laugh when they see her come up on the street?
Because you have to salute.
Yeah.
But there's nothing that says you can't laugh.
It's true. There's no regulation that says you can't laugh at your superior officer's ridiculous haircut. Inverted tonsure is what she's rocking.
All right.
I've heard of high and tight. I've never seen high and sloppy. Like,
yeah.
It's not even particularly well done. The hairline is kind of like jagged. It's like she did it to herself in the dark without a mirror. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, this is the haircut that Jim Carrey in Dumb and Dumber goes in and requests with a bowl on his head, right? Shaves it around.
I don't know. They're spending a lot of time making this woman who is an actual supermodel. That's the other thing. She's like 6 foot tall. She's got like all these fashion shots. Like, she is a legit model. They spend a lot of time making her look ridiculous.
Why? Okay. Well, maybe we should get into the feedback and we can talk more about ridiculous Jadis.
Let's do it.
Has anybody seen Michonne? We'll be right back.
We're about 10 weeks out from House of the Dragon Season 2, and it's time to prepare for war.
Which in our case means, well, watching a lot of Hot D and reading a lot of Fire and Blood.
Each week between now and June 16th, Maester Anthony and his co-host Steve are hosting a watch of each episode of Hot D Season 1. And then me and Jim are going to host a discussion of the differences between the events on that episode and how they're recounted in George R.R. Martin's historical tome, Fire and Blood.
That's right, I've resorted to reading dragon books. God help us all. We'll see if my fresh eyes add any new insights or predictions into season 2.
Arm yourselves with all the lore you can for the battles ahead. House of the Dragon returns June 16th, but we've got you covered until then.
Check out all of our upcoming Hot D coverage on the Hot D feed or on Bald Move Pulp, available wherever you listen to podcasts. Since the dawn of time, we've been putting clothes on our back that identify us with our people, our group, our tribe.
And while Bald Move might be one of the smallest, weirdest tribes out there, transcending all concepts of border, class, culture, and creed, we still have respect for the old ways.
At support.baldmove.com, you can get t-shirts, hats, mugs, and more. We have something for every one of our podcasts, or just wear the four pips of the Bald Move logo with pride.
Bald Move merch beats running around naked, and they make a great gift for the Bald Move fan in your life. Join our tribe! Head over to support.baldmove.com and click on merch to start shopping.
Has anyone spotted Rick? We're back with The Ones Who Live. All right, like I said, I cut a couple from Bill and Allison here because, you know, people might want to discover the character of Jadis.
Go on the Jadis
and the
voyage,
CRM.
The journey. Yeah. You don't want to miss out on the journey, the Jadis journey.
Yeah, but I do appreciate the recaps, and I did read them. Brian K. writes in, he says, oh, and if you want to send in feedback, I'm not used to doing this. This is my,
yeah,
I need
we're...
some training wheels here. If you want to send in feedback, we have a feedback address that you can send it to. It's twd@baldmove.com. It's watchingdead@baldmove.com. It's also walkingdead@baldmove.com. Pick your poison there. I would suggest TWD because it takes the least time to type.
Yeah, no one wants to spend any more time on The Walking Dead than is absolutely necessary.
Right. Even me. So let's get on with it. Brian K says, hey guys, I don't watch The Walking Dead anymore, but I do listen to your podcasts on them because even when I watched, they were considerably more entertaining than the actual episodes.
Anyway,
this is my one contribution. You questioned the meaning of swearing on a sword last episode. In Hamlet, the title character swears a group of men to secrecy by having them swear on a sword. Here's the significance. When a sword is presented hilt up, it resembles a cross. So swearing on a sword is like swearing to God.
Oh.
That makes a lot of sense.
I thought it
and
was
in
a
battlefield.
Literal... You always have a sword there, yeah.
Yeah, right. But you don't want to carry crosses. Those are cumbersome.
No, what are we, a Holy Roman Empire? I like that, and also, because I thought it was like a literal ceremony, like these red armored dudes swear, they have like a ceremonial sword, they literally, like some kind of military mason outfit that they literally swear on, which is still not out of the question, but I wasn't aware that this was like a saying.
Apparently. All right, Seawells says back once again because Bald Move dragged me back after the Daryl Dixon retconning to Joel
I indulge a little bit in Mr. Meeseeks? Like, oh, he got us into this. I'm pointing right at Scott Gimple. And then Scott Gimple points at, did I? Yeah, like there's a chain of responsibility for why we're here, Seawells. And I'm just as baffled as you.
Says, I didn't think of a dildo when Rick got his fake hand. Instead, I immediately thought Richard Lannister, the Kingslayer. So during the helicopter story, Rick was talking about his dad halfway through. I was thinking, farmer? Didn't he grow up in South America? And it was this moment that I remembered Aaron's skit, They Ain't Us, during the Tornado Wilderness season, where he had a skit where Rick's dad was an SS officer hiding from his war crimes. So that's where that memory came from.
In Argentina. I love it. I love it that you have to go to the Walking Dead Wikipedia to realize that, oh, right, Rick Grimes' dad didn't live in South America hiding out from the International War Crime Tribunal.
Yeah, pretty good. I went to try and find which episode that skit is in, and I couldn't find it on our website. I found so many other skits that I listened to and cracked up, but...
I don't know if it's a full blown skit. It might have just been one of those things where, like, in the middle of the episode, something tickled or funny. And
I don't think so. I think it was an actual skit. But maybe.
Yeah, we find the episode where Rick references his father. That would probably be where it's at. But hey, if you know, twd@baldmove.com, because we'd like to laugh at it ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And then he finishes off here by sending in some details about Michonne and when she showed up. She's not an OG. She saved Andrea at the end of the Herschel Farm arc and then killed the governor's daughter when and then showed up at the prison. So
I was right. At the tail, she shows up at the tail end of season two is kind of like a cliffhanger. Like,
but
what
I think
is
I was
this?
Also right, because she shows up at the prison. I think the first time we actually see her is at the prison. Like it, but
she
in that
met,
episode.
Wasn't Glenn or somebody running through the woods and they're ones that found, or was Andrea? And then Andrea
she
gets
saves
sick
Andrea.
And yeah. This is all coming back to me now. Like her and Rick and everybody's eating dog.
Oh, she does come back. Okay.
Yeah, like her and Andrea get prepared together, and I think Andrea gets sick, and Michonne like goes out to try to find help for her, and she shows up at the prison. And
but I thought this was all filmed in like flashback.
I think so. There is
an
episode
with the prison arc. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's actually happening in real
time. You see Michonne with the two zombies and a sword, and Andrea meets her at the end of season two, and then season three happens, and the prison gets established, and then there is an episode where they catch back up with what Michonne and Andrea have been doing. Yeah,
okay.
I think that's how it
that
goes.
That makes sense.
And I'm not going to go back and watch it to find out if it's
Hell
wrong,
no.
So.
All right, Ray from Brooklyn writes in and says, overall, I had a positive experience with the first episode, though there are nits to pick. I thought they pulled off in one episode what going in I believed to be a heavy lift. They made me believe Rick, of all people, would have tried to return to the main show and inevitably be forced to give up that fight. I'm excited to see where the show takes him. Yeah, I agree. They did a fairly good job of breaking Rick. Better job than breaking Michonne, I thought.
Yeah. I wonder. I guess that's because Rick had a believable situation. Like, everything, I just, like, yeah, I believe that he has a hard time getting away from the CRM. Where Michonne, with the caravan people, they had just enough rope to hang themselves with, and they did after tripping themselves three times.
Well, and Rick had no way to continue the search, and I think that's the thing that ultimately broke him, right? If he could just continue looking for Michonne forever, he would have. Just like Michonne, well, so that's the difference, I guess, to me, is Michonne gave up where Rick was forced into a position where he could not continue searching.
Yeah. Yeah, they both had different insurmountable and their by their lights obstacles.
Sure. He continues here. The biggest nitpick I have was the cutting off of Rick's hand. I get it. Comic fans like myself have wanted this for ages, but the execution upset me as it goes against established lore of infection mechanics. In both comic and show, a bitten person limb, Dale in the comic, Bob in the show, is cooked and eaten. And in one of the most iconic scenes, they both laugh hysterically as the Terminus cannibals are eating tainted meat, implying they will now die. So if cooking meat from a person who is bitten kills you, am I now supposed to believe Rick can stick his bloody stump into a burning walker and not die? Come on, show. Have you seen The Walking Dead? What are your thoughts?
Okay. If I'm really going to take this seriously.
Which you shouldn't, but okay.
It's not entirely common for people to food poison themselves when they're cooking meat because they don't cook it long enough. They don't get it to the high enough internal temperature. They don't handle the meat safely after it's been cooked. They use the same implements that they use to prepare the meat post-cooking to pre-cooking. There's a lot of mechanisms for people to get sick from tainted meat.
And the people likely to get sick from tainted meat, cannibals are probably high up on that list.
And then there's a difference between meat that's cooked to 165, 170 degree internal temperature and meat that's glowing orange because it's actually charcoal that's on fire. Mm-hmm. Like, but then again, I saw a zombie with his head glowing like a jack-o'-lantern still functioning because apparently that's not hot enough to kill the virus. So,
and we've seen people die in hot cars because they didn't have air conditioning.
Right, so, that was back during the Darabont era, but still, yeah.
Sorry, walkers die in hot cars. So
yeah, that was the excuse given then to their shitty world building and lack of attention to detail. This is just going with the rule cool. So like, yeah, I don't think there's any way to take it seriously and come up with a way that I don't know how you shove a bloody stump into a zombie's guts, but if the zombie guts are literally like a charcoal, like a Weber charcoal grill. That's a different kettle of fish.
With you. All right, let's go over to Brad, who says Rick Grimes is back, and he's even dropped that pesky hand weight people tend to hold on to as they enter their twilight years. This episode definitely had that big Rick energy we've come to expect from one Sheriff Grimes. Step one. Your hand preventing you from escape? No problem. Just be man enough to hack it off like you just got fucked over the worst game of Truth or Dare ever conceived. Yeah. Somehow it's the most Walking Dead thing ever to have Rick come to a logical decision on his own that his hand was holding him back. 100% that seems like a television Rick Grimes decision.
To be serious, though, it did, I think, sell the idea that he has tried everything to get away.
Yeah, without showing us a huge montage of him escaping.
Like, this is an extreme situation that he's... And if he's prepared to do this, what wasn't he... Didn't he try, you know?
Sure. Step two, have Rick write letters to thin air in order to establish Rick Grimes' superpower of monologues. Yeah, that's a bit of a trope. Have Rick's captors... step three, have Rick's captors see his greatness in the form of his Georgia mullet swamp-ass combo despite 5 years of escape attempts after letting Romulan Commander Jadis recruit him from a town of capable survivors. So Daryl and Carol, of all people, were not seen as valuable recruits. What good is stealing people from functioning communities and enslaving them? Why choose people with close connections? They are wasting helicopter fuel for loose cannons like Rick Grimes.
So I want to talk a little bit about this, too, because are we... And I could easily believe this. Are, like, Rick and Michonne and our whole group of Alexandria from Carol, Daryl on down, are they into, like, the top 001% badasses in North America? Or is any town that survived this, like, any given collective of survivors this large that survived this long, are they all that badass? Because I never feels like it. It never feels like we run into another competent group of people.
I mean, take this example, this episode, for example, right? I didn't feel like those were a competent group of people. I don't think those are badasses. I think you got one guy who knows how to build stuff.
Yeah,
the caravan of courage here. So, no, I don't think everyone is. I think Alexandrians are pretty high up on that list because they've had a lot of adversity to face. I think there are a lot of groups out there who are just getting by on not being found yet. You know, world's a big place.
It could be. I'm not even impressed. Like, I was never impressed with the Commonwealth. Like, it seemed like the only thing they had is equipment and guns. Like, pound for pound, Daryl and any of our group just handed them their asses in direct conflict. And even at the CRM, like, I get it that they were concussed and they had just gone through a crash. But, like, Michonne kills, like, a half dozen of these guys. No problem. So, yeah, I think that they're just... I guess I buy that there's something special. There's some... That these people have something, some it... That is, I don't know, that's like attractive to people in power that they think they can use.
But Daryl, Carol, Aaron, none of those people are concerned whatsoever.
I think they would be if they were aware. Oh, yeah.
Well, true. Why does Justin Jadis kill him? She knows about them.
It must be something to their long-standing. It's got to be something about their long-standing deal, I guess.
Yeah.
I forget what the terms of that deal is. The Wikipedia didn't tell me.
Yeah, we'll see. I'm sure we'll find out more about it. Step 4, put a loose cannon in an Orwellian world with serious East Asia or Eurasia vibes. This episode seemed reluctant to portray the CRM in a negative light despite the lack of choice given to its occupants. I'm wondering if we will be presented with a complicated political thriller landscape or if The Walking Dead will shit the bed and give us the emotional equivalent of eighth grade civics and political science. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I feel like we're just gearing up for the big look at the CRM and why they're so nasty. I think if you've seen The World Beyond, you might know a little bit more than this show has given us a peek into, but that's they've got to do it at some point.
That's my perspective. And I also just like, I just don't buy that, like, well, these are dead weight drains on our society, so we got to kill them. There's got to be something else to that because, like, why would you do that? Especially you're talking about Omaha and Portland that are all the way away from you in the country. Mm-hmm. Like, and they don't have manifestly don't have the helicopter support. You're so like, just let them die. Just like, you know, why would you kill everyone? I had a little bit of that question about, like, why did they just bomb these people on site? Like, why do they choose to take some in and not others? Scott Gimple made the point on the behind the scenes. It's like, well, they see a large group moving in the general direction of Philadelphia, and that's just their orders. They just kill everyone because they. But I'm like, well, why'd you do that? You see like 20 people on the ground. Why wouldn't you land and try to recruit them? Like, do you not want more people, or is it literally like? But if you don't want more people, why are you taking anyone? Why do you take Michonne? Trying to replace losses and build up their society. More people equals more power, better
economy.
There's
also a balance, though. You know, you got to have the supplies for more people,
right?
You got
the resources,
sure. Yeah, overpopulation could be a real thing in this society.
I wonder if you're going to find out this is like an actual empire where, like, they're not self-sufficient. They've just been stealing. They've been using their superior firepower and resources to steal food and supplies from the other cities. And once they're drained dry, they kill them so that they can't tell anybody. And then they try to find the next big group. But there goes why Jadis hasn't told Alexandria. Some kind of vestigial loyalty that she has. But her one defining trait that's been true over every iteration of her character is she's a backstabbing, conniving trash goblin. So I don't understand where the whole, like, and you know I like those people. Like, yeah, you were in a fucking intimate relationship with Father Gabriel. I remember. You actually tried to pick up Rick. And there was a little bit of that in this episode too, where she's like, you've been keeping your shit tight.
Right.
You look good, yeah. Rick. Like, there's a little bit of this seductress thing to her too. Man eater. I don't know what they're, that Jadis is a fucking insane character.
Maybe she just likes being a homewrecker. She doesn't move in and start flirting with him until she knows Michonne is back.
True.
She had years at the CRM to be getting on that. She just doesn't find any interest in Rick until she can break him up.
She wants to see Michonne in the cuck chair.
Yeah, apparently.
Of Rick's apartment, yeah.
All right, let's move to Keenan, who wants to say, Aaron, I just got done listening to the episode recap where you said you haven't finished reading the comics yet. I remember a fan of Bald Move gifting you a full collection of the comics, and you still haven't read them? Come on, man. All jokes aside, thanks for the pod and hurry up and catch up. Thanks again for the great Potter Commission as well.
It's on my list of things to do, but a man cannot send another man 4 phone books and then demand they be read. I did go through the process of finding the exact page I left off on and bookmarking it, and it's okay. Literally 2/3 through the series. If you put those phone books stacked on top of each other, it's literally at the halfway point of the 3rd phone book. So yeah, one of these days, you know what it is? I keep waiting to get sick because I love reading comic books when I'm sick.
Oh, okay.
And I haven't, I shit you not, I have not been sick since the coronavirus.
Yeah, no, that's the one positive is it took me 4 years to get sick after COVID.
I've had like some cold, like summer cold crud that like, you know, slows me down, but I have not had a fever nor vomited once in the last 4 years. So
nice.
It's really, really fucking with my ability to just do, because that's, you know, like when I'm really sick, I don't feel like watching TV. I don't feel like playing video games. But historically, I do like reading comic books, getting a big old box of comics and just reading random ones. So I'll get to it one of these days.
All right, Corey G. So Sub-Commander Jadis is part of the Tal Shiar?
So. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. That's apparently, she's one of them backdoor Romulans.
I guess so. And finally, JP says, so is this show any good? Find it impossible to judge The Walking Dead by anything other than The Walking Dead standards. Yeah. In which case, I guess it's okay. Daryl Dixon is in France. That was more interesting and, dare I say, fun in parts, however stupid that concept was. For me, the one thing this show had to do was make the reunion a moment, a real moment. And JP says they failed spectacularly. Rick uniting with Daryl post-Claimers and post-Savior Torture were bigger emotional reunions. Rick and Lori after 2 episodes was more of a moment than 2 of the best characters in the history of the show reuniting after supposed years of searching. Wrapping it up in ridiculous circumstances and as a cliffhanger in episode 1 just sucked the air out of it. Since this show was announced, that is the moment I wanted to see and was left feeling meh. I actually felt more when Nat was shot.
Is The Walking Dead good? That's a fascinating question, because most shows that are trash are like manifestly so. They have a low budget. They don't have a good cast. The writing sucks. The only thing I can think, and The Walking Dead, which had the start of a serious prestige drama, that was the promise of The Walking Dead. You've got this Oscar-winning director and writer who's going to be the showrunner. You get this all-star cast of like high quality character actors who most of have a long history of working with Darabont and getting like, you know, like I mean, half the cast is from, what is it, The Fog or The Mist,
yeah,
which is kind of like in the wall. I mean, it's this bleak tale of surviving something awful happening and the mental and emotional and spiritual cost it has. It was ready to be a slam dunk, but Darabont actually wanted to make a prestige show, and AMC Studios are like, you're trying to go, we need twice as much for half as much, and the rest is history. The only thing I can think of, the other show that had like these lavish budgets and amazing cast and just completely fell apart and was silly, is late stage Game of Thrones.
Sure.
Because that's the other one, had this like deep cast that could do anything. Every scene looks like $1 million. And Walking Dead is, especially these miniseries, have been noticeably better looking than even what I thought was a pretty good looking show towards the tail end of their run in season 10 and season 11. And they have, you know, no one can say, I mean, Andrew Lincoln, Danai Gurira, they're amazing actors. It's just the, you look at world-class special effects, you look at the world-class acting, and then you look at, it's the writing, guys. It's the writing. Yeah. Writers of this show's professional pages. There's one of these things is not like the other.
It is so cheap to invest in good writing.
It really is.
Compared to everything else that they're doing right, it's the cheapest thing to do, and they're getting it so wrong.
But even then, they're cheaping out because they're consistently getting actors that have very little professional experience in completely unrelated fields, and they bring them in for cheap, and they sit them in the room, and they say, here are the 12 set pieces I forgot the guy who does all the zombie makeup.
Nicotero.
Nicotero said he wants to do this season. Fit him in. And also, we can't change sets. We got another year that we got to pay off on this Alexandria set. Can't ever change locations.
And that's the difference, right? I mean, Game of Thrones. So Walking Dead, when they started, I could understand, like, we don't want to spend a shitload of money on this because we have no idea if it'll succeed. And Game of Thrones was the same, right? They didn't start spending $20 million an episode.
Yeah, right.
They made a show that caught fire. Mm-hmm. Millions of people started watching it, and they scaled their budget with the show. Yes. They were like, we have the hottest show on television. Let's make it look like the hottest show on television. The Walking Dead never did that. The Walking Dead took that money and started self-dealing to their production studios.
Yep.
And started cutting tax write-offs and shit. And now they have a show that is laughably bad instead of a franchise that they could, like, Hot D. Look, whatever you want to say about the end of Game of Thrones, Hot D is a return to form for them. Walking Dead has never had the return to form. They've never said, okay, we messed up here. Yes. Let's double down in our efforts and let's make this the actual good thing we want that's sustainable.
And there's, you know, we're talking about just stupid shit, like the fact that the stuff they did in a budget, but some of that stuff, like, I still am salty at how they dealt with Chandler Riggs, man. Like, Carl.
Oh, yeah.
Is supposed to be the emotional core of this show, and like the whole thing is watching him grow up, and he commits to this show, goes to college in Georgia, buys a house in Georgia, and they kill him off. That's just beyond the pale.
And the reason why is so dumb. It's all for shock value. It's this this story methodology they have is cheap storytelling. Lowest common denominator of stuff. Instead of doing something interesting and compelling and new, they're just reworking the old formulas and hitting you over the head with them. And it's not good.
Yeah. Yeah. And it finally started interfering with the Kang era because, like, you know, I think there was some excitement. It's like, oh my God, what of the major characters? Who of Daryl, Michonne, Negan, Carol? Who are these people that are going to die? To answer, no one. No one of importance is going to die. Rosita mm-hmm. was the big death. It's just ridiculous.
I'm with you. But yeah, that's it for the feedback. That's it for the episode. Again, if you want to send in email to be considered for feedback next time, I suggest you do it at twd@baldmove.com. But Aaron, what do we have to look forward to?
If you want more information, check out of our schedule and stuff. Check out our social medias at Bald Move everywhere. And then if you'd like to support us, get extra content, including our fabulous off the clock shows where we're going to be talking in the future about Constellation. Just did one on Constellation Blue Eye Samurai. I'm going to be talking about the Avatar. Got to lunch with Jim and Aaron. We got so much stuff going on you don't even know about because you're not in the club. Plus ad-free feeds. You got to get tired of hearing the ads, right? Ads suck on podcasts. You can make them go away for as little as $5 a month. Support.baldmove.com. That's it. We got Shogun coming up the rest of this week. We just got done. Also, you might want to check out our Dune 2 review. But that's it. We look forward to the start of the second movie next week and seeing where Jadis is going to go with all this and seeing how Michonne and Rick are going to take down a micronation with a full army and air force. I can't wait. We'll see you back next week. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
Later.